From SBR News, this is Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Spokane's Safe and Healthy Task Force has released 14 recommendations for improving the region's response to criminal justice, mental health, and substance abuse challenges. The group convened 9 months ago as a response to what members viewed as a crisis. They saw downtown as unsafe and homelessness as a problem that was growing worse. The 40 or so members split into several subcommittees to study issues and bring recommendations back to the full committee. Last Thursday, they introduced their findings to the public. This hour, we'll hear the broad outlines of the report and the voices of people who participated in the discussions. That's this edition of Inland Journal from SBR News.
Hello, I am Emily Cameron. I am President and CEO of the Downtown Spokane Partnership, and thank you for being here with us this afternoon.
Emily Cameron delivered the big picture view at last Thursday's rollout of the Safe and Healthy Task Force report.
As many of us know, the escalating behavioral health needs and persistent public safety concerns have strained families, livelihoods, and public resources across Spokane County. And while we've wrestled with these challenges for far too long, we have yet to break the status quo and meaningfully address some of these challenges head on. But over the last 9 months, we have seen something meaningful happen. People have showed up, not once, not for a single meeting, and not just for a press conference, but they have showed up month after month, committed to doing the difficult work together. We've seen these efforts begin with energy and urgency, only to lose momentum in the past. But today, they don't lack alignment across systems or jurisdictions. Instead, this is an effort that's intentionally different. And as people with differing backgrounds, perspectives, expertise, professions, and lived experiences have come together in the same room, some with very different priorities, some who disagreed on solutions, they have brought experiences that have challenged assumptions that others have held, sometimes even our own. But yet, they stayed together, they listened, they learned from one another, and they have continued to ask a simple but powerful question. How do we make Spokane a better place for each and every person who calls this home? As someone who works every day in the heart of our region, I can tell you I've been encouraged by what this process represents. Not because every challenge has been solved, but because our community demonstrated the ability, the willingness, and the drive to come together and solve our problems together. The central truth emerged through this process. A community is only as safe as it is healthy, and it is only as healthy as it is safe. These goals are not separate, and today you're going to hear about how they rise and they fall together.
You can find the task force recommendations at the Safe and Healthy Spokane website. They begin with the information that policing and social service agencies collect about their clients. There's plenty of it, but panel members felt that information is not well shared. We hear next from Misty Griffith from Spokane County District Court.
Spokane systems touch the same people, but no system has the full picture. Building a shared data and accountability infrastructure is the foundation that makes every other recommendation in this report measurable, credible, and sustainable. So this will be the foundation of what we're putting together and will inform all of the things that we hope to move forward with today. Right now, key systems in Spokane, the jail, the emergency room, probation, pretrial services, therapeutic courts, behavioral health providers, housing programs, they're all touching many of the same people, but again, none of them can see the full picture. Agencies duplicate work, potentially miss opportunities to coordinate, and spend public dollars responding to crises that a more connected system could have prevented or resolved earlier, potentially in that process. The task force identified this as one of the most foundational things that needs to change. When impact cannot be measured, well-functioning programs cannot make the case for the resources that they need. And when community is asked to invest more in these systems, it's reasonable to ask what the current investment is producing. Right now, Spokane does not have a solid shared public answer to that question. So we're hoping to work on answering that. This recommendation can help change that. The jail has a robust and transparent data dashboard. That's a genuine best practice. And we have other departments working on theirs as well. So this is a great start to these efforts. We have a volunteer team within the task force that has already begun developing in coordinated data framework across the systems. So essentially, we're not starting from scratch. There are things already in place, but we'll be focusing on initially on some small wins that we hope to transition into some future big wins for collaboration. This is about connecting what exists and building towards something the whole community can see and trust. We talk about silos often. We're trying to break that down. That's the whole point of this. And if we can share data, we can better help the people in our community. When agencies can share information in real time, they can identify multiple systems and coordinate a response before the next crisis. They can track whether handoffs between providers are working. They can give elected officials, providers, and the public a shared, honest picture of whether things are getting better. And we can pivot and make changes if we need to. That's the beauty of all of this. The council that the task force is calling for will depend on this data infrastructure to report publicly on progress, surface where implementation is stalling, and make the case for continued investment. Building this foundation now is what makes that accountability structure meaningful over time. So we are very excited to take on this task, to come together, bring anyone at the table who wants to participate, and hopefully we'll show some better outcomes for people that are going through our judicial systems, our medical systems, and our treatment systems.
That's Misty Griffith from Spokane County District Court speaking at the rollout of the Safe and Healthy Task Force report. Next is Mike Sparber, Spokane County's Senior Director of Law and Justice. He spoke about streamlining the process designed to help people with mental health and substance abuse problems.
Spokane's Justice and Behavioral Health Services have several tributaries, whether it be the law enforcement, the fire department, the hospitals, or the courts. They all flow through the different areas, and there's different intercepts and interventions along the way. However, all of us don't have shared intake or assessment forms. And when we don't, it causes the individual to go through several different steps, filling out the forms multiple times often. And it also has whoever the first responder or the intervener, starting from ground zero every time they come in contact with them. And we all know that's not what's best for them. During these intercepts, the agencies involved doesn't have all the necessary background and medical information necessary to know what led up to the event. So the process starts over and over and over again.
Sparber mentioned the range of services that were developed for people who navigate the legal system, from programs that divert people away from jail into treatment programs to the stabilization center that allows people who are arrested to go straight to a facility and get treatment for up to 3 days. Sparber says one of Spokane's most important challenges is providing help to the people who use the system most often.
We know that there is a small group of individuals in the Spokane area that cause the majority of the crime. And the reason this goes on and on and on is because their needs aren't met. Many of them have suffered from homelessness, again, mental health issues, and the intervention has to be met where they are, along with the accountability for the crimes they commit. And, you know, if that means longer incarceration to get it corrected, that's what it means. And so moving forward, we would like to establish a cross-system coordinated intervention strategy focused specifically on the high utilizers. Work with the Sheriff's Office and the Spokane Police Department, along with the Fire Department, identify who these people are, and then start developing a program around them. And then identify a population of high users that are also filling our hospital emergency rooms, and make sure that, you know, that we also pay the necessary attention to them to help bring about change in that area as well.
That's Mike Sparber from the Spokane County Law and Justice staff. You're listening to a special Inland Journal. Today's focus is on the recommendations recently released by Spokane's Safe and Healthy Task Force. The group included a wide variety of participants, including those who have spent time behind bars. Angel Tommy O. Sam represented the group Yo-Yo Spokane.
In Native communities, we've always understood that we're only as strong as our most vulnerable relatives. For generations, the care of our youth, our elders, and those who are struggling belonged to all of us. We understood that healthy communities are built by investing in people before they reach a crisis through relationship, accountability, family, culture, and community responsibility. That is why these recommendations matter. They recognize that not every crisis is a crime. They call for expanding alternative crisis response, strengthening culturally responsive services, investing in youth and young adults before they reach a breaking point, and building in the workforce needed to make those services available when they need them. For Natives, these recommendations are especially important. Today, Native people remain disproportionately represented in these systems of crisis, behavioral health, and incarceration. These recommendations offer a different path, one rooted in prevention, intervention, healing, and connection. And what's good for Native Americans is good for everybody. So I know this because I've lived this, and I've spent nearly a decade walking alongside others who have been apprised to similar paths. I've survived domestic violence, homelessness, addiction, untreated mental health challenges, separated from my children and my community. Over the last 9 years in recovery and service, I've worked alongside many, many people facing these same challenges. What changed lives was rarely punishment. The punishment doesn't change, so how can punishment be transformational? What changed lives and trajectories was intervention. Interventions like having a peer, a mentor, a counselor, a cultural connection, a safe place to stay, someone who believed a person was worth investing in before crisis became tragedy. That is what these recommendations are about. They're about ensuring children, our sisters, our mothers with children, and our brothers receive support before entering the justice system. They're about making sure someone experiencing a behavioral health crisis is met by the right responder. They're about creating pathways to healing, stability, and belonging. Often safety and care are presented as opposing ideas. They are not. As a Native woman, I understand that safety is not simply the absence of crime. Safety is the presence of healthy families, connected communities, healing, opportunity, and hope. The recommendations are not asking us to choose between public safety and public health. They're asking us to recognize that public health is public safety. Healthy people create healthy families. Healthy families create healthy communities. And healthy communities are safer communities.
That was Angel Tommy O'Sam from the group Yo-Yo Spokane at a recent Safe and Healthy Task Force briefing in Spokane. Next, Dr. Melissa Mace, the director of the NAACP's Spokane chapter.
You cannot build anything on the worst day of somebody's life. The worst day of your life is not the pivot point of forever. It is a moment of change. It is a moment of pause. It is a moment to call somebody in, to get to their level, to see them truly, and then make a plan to move forward. That is what these recommendations are. This is seeing people where they are, seeing them, understanding that sometimes we all stumble, but you get up and you dust yourself off. It doesn't mean that you never stumble again. It just means that you've learned something. And you know, maybe that's not the path. Maybe we need to pivot and move forward. Cultural responsive care is that. I own a mental health clinic, a community mental health clinic, and this is my heart. This is what I do. I see people on their worst days, on their best days. They allow me to walk their journey with them. And staffing this concept is going to be vitally important. Ensuring that those who need services receive the best services. Not leaning into who's available, paying people, and seeing people as a whole community. Those who work there, those who provide the services, who are receiving the services, who are doing all the jobs within and throughout that facility should be seen and supported in the same way as those who develop policies and do payroll, because making the beds is just as important as developing policy. And everyone who should be treated as such for success, because that could be you in 2 moments, 6 paychecks. And forgetting that is a fundamental flaw. And we can do better.
That's Dr. Melissa Mace from the Spokane chapter of the NAACP. She was speaking at a recent Safe and Healthy Task Force meeting about its recommendations for elected officials. It's a roadmap for how Spokane can improve its criminal justice system to better incorporate social needs programs. Chad Wendell brought the business perspective to the group. He is the director of the Hutton Settlement.
Our nonprofit is primarily funded by commercial property rents. And over about the last 10 years, our challenges with property management, primarily due to vacancies and crime, have led to lower rents. And so I became vocal. I became vocal with the lens of a property manager. And that property manager lens led me to like one simple answer to this problem. We need a new jail. Over the last nine months, I have to tell you, and thanks to these individuals here and to the others on the task force, that they've opened my eyes up. And I've been blessed to look at the community through multiple lenses, like Angel's and Melissa's. It's been a lesson. It's been humbling, but most importantly, a better appreciation for our community. So I want to thank the others on the task force for being patient with me while educating me on the complexities and shortcomings of our current judicial system. I'm going to be speaking about facilities and housing. Before I discuss the 2 recommendations, I want to emphasize that these are not 2 investments. They're 2 halves of 1 investment. Modern, right-sized justice facilities and community-based treatment, crisis stabilization, diversion, reentry, prevention, and housing capacity must be planned together because each makes the other work. The task force core conviction from the start has been that safe and healthy move together. You cannot have one without the other. The task force has held that line throughout, and it matters that the community hears it clearly. They need to move forward together. One without the other does not address the issues we have tried but failed to adequately address in the past. So first recommendation under facilities. Invest in modern integrated justice facilities and the coordinated network of community-based facilities that advance public safety and community health. Our current jail is functionally obsolete. It was built for another era. Our current jail isn't just facing wear and tear issues since it was built, coincidentally the year I graduated Lewis and Clark High School in 1986. The current jail does not fit the necessary programs and services required for comprehensive treatment and support of both those working in the jail as well as those that are incarcerated. In 2026, we have a mismatch between our current facilities and the reality of who is showing up in our correctional system. We as a community are not doing justice for the people with complex behavioral health needs, substance abuse disorders, and significant medical needs. The severity of the complex challenges was not known or contemplated when our correctional facilities were built decades ago. These are not the populations our existing facilities were built to serve. Our community deserves right-sized justice facilities as part of a broader, connected system, not as a standalone solution, but as an infrastructure that only works when it is paired with a continuum of community-based options that make up a system. The task force has been in agreement on this. We need both. And I respectfully ask our elected leaders, including our mayor of Spokane, to have faith in the work the task force has done and not to demand that their personal agenda supersedes our work.
Chad Wendell also issued a recommendation about the need for more housing, especially for one particular group of people.
When people leave correctional facilities with nowhere to go, the cycle does not end. It restarts. Without adequate housing options, we are investing in a system that releases people back to the same circumstances that brought them in. The community needs more housing so people have a real place to land, a genuine chance to stabilize, and a path forward that doesn't lead back to the streets or back into the system.
That's Safe and Healthy Task Force member Chud Wendell as we work our way through the group's recommendations. Matt Albright from Providence talked about the strain on the healthcare system, in part from people with mental health and substance abuse issues.
To start with a statistic, at Sacred Heart Medical Center in the adult emergency department, last year we had 60,000 adult visits. Of those visits, 14% or 8,000 were due to behavioral health and substance use crisis. And of those 8,000, 32% or 2,500 returned within 30 days of discharge. And that included many of them returning over and over and over again. The theme for the advisory committee that myself and also Eric Lamb from the city of Spokane Valley co-chaired was around warm handoffs and peer support. Many times our community members that are suffering from crisis are lost in transition points, whether it's from the emergency department to care, to recovery, to treatment, from the jail to services throughout the legal system that we're all very, very familiar with. The path forward is a connected care system. The path forward is a right place with the right support by the right people. Not to leave anyone alone in crisis or a very vulnerable state where further crisis can occur. Warm handoffs are key, and we've seen that throughout our healthcare systems, and warm handoff by peers is even more important. Those with lived experiences that have that human connection, whether it's from what they've experienced in the past, or whether they have a connection from the community that they come from. I will give you an example of a successful program, the type of programs that we need to further invest in, the type of programs that we need to further hire for, and the type of programs that will drive best practice through these recommendations. The Spokane Treatment and Recovery Services Program, or STARS, supported by the county, by the cities, and also through healthcare systems like ours, have an incredible success because of the structure by which they practice care. In our emergency department, for those that are under influence and under crisis that present themselves, they're offered their sobering program, and if they accept, peers from STARS will show up in our emergency department, will help stabilize, talk to, educate about the programs. If they're willing to be part of those programs, go back to their sobering center, become sober, learn more, and hopefully accept their recovery services. The beauty of this program is we know in crisis recovery, many times it's over and over again, and the STARS program is constantly there for us, for our providers, and for the patients that we care for in a very successful model. So I'll end with the recommendations from our advisory committee. Number one, to integrate peers at each step in the behavioral health care system. Number two, to formalize procedures across the care system that support an integrated care planning and process, or what we refer to as warm handoffs. Because ultimately, this will improve our community's access to urgent complex care and ultimately provide our community with a better care model for the future.
That's Matt Albright, the Director of Operations and Services Lines at Providence Healthcare. He's a member of the Safe and Healthy Task Force. To close, we transition from the healthcare system to the court system. Superior Court Judge Tony Hazel is the court's presiding judge.
What the common thread is, and what I see every day as a judge, and I think all judges have the same experience, we see the same people cycling through the system. We see constant recidivism. It's actually quite rare that I look at someone's criminal history and I see this is their first offense. That is not what the bulk of our court-involved people are. Rather, we have a cycle. And we need to make a distinction. There absolutely is a place for incarceration. There are violent offenders out there that will do real harm to the community, such as sexually violent predators or people that engage in constant violence. So jail is a necessary evil, or we need that tool to incapacitate. But the bulk and majority of the people that come through our system do not represent that serious threat to public safety. What we see commonly is individuals that have very unmet behavioral health needs. They have not been treated for their mental health illness. They have co-occurring chemical dependency problems, and they experience housing instability. And that those are the causes that lead to that perpetual cycle of recidivism. And those are the issues that we specifically need to address. I get to represent at today's press conference one of the foundational recommendations of the task force, something that I feel passionate about and I feel is a necessary ingredient if we ever want to improve our criminal justice system here locally. And that is the need for a permanent, ongoing coordinating structure. The reason for coordination is the criminal justice system is siloed. It is not siloed because of bad intentions or incompetent leadership. It is siloed by design, by the Constitution, by the laws that create agencies. It is by design to be siloed. And there are many wisdoms behind that. Whenever you're dealing with government in an area that intersects with its population, and part of the function of that government is to sometimes inflict suffering on citizens and sometimes inflict punishment, it is wise to have checks and balances in place. So we don't want to get rid of those checks and balances, and we want to maintain the healthy aspects of the siloing while addressing the negative aspects. And those negative aspects are real. We experience that in inefficiency. We have taxpayers that whose dollars could be spent better. We also have the inhumane aspect of our criminal justice system. And we have a continuing need to coordinate. This task force was not the first effort in Spokane that attempted to do this. But it did a very excellent job, and it was such a pleasure to participate in that. But we've had past iterations. We've had the Blueprint for Reform. We have had hired consultants over the years. All of them have been informing us of the same thing, which also jive absolutely perfectly with my own experiences. A foundation is the need for coordination because the criminal justice system is so complex. It involves not only the regular stakeholders, such as the courts, the prosecutors, the public defenders. It includes, of course, law enforcement. But it also includes dispatch, emergency services, and all the behavioral health service providers that are providing that behavioral health need here in Spokane. It also includes and needs to include people with lived experience so that there's a feedback loop about people who are affected by our criminal justice system. It also requires victim advocates. All perspectives are valid and bring meaningful information to the table that stakeholders can then utilize to make self-corrections and implement meaningful change that the public will experience as a reduction in recidivism, that individuals will experience as a reduction in needless incarceration that can be avoided, and that we all can experience as a community, which is the goal here. And those goals, as spoken to, are not incompatible. Why have past efforts failed? What's the key ingredient? Two things. The coordination structure in the past has always been temporary. It's always been in the form of a pilot program, or it's a temporary momentum that builds to build that coordination. It usually doesn't get the composition of the coordination perfectly correct because key stakeholders are missing. And then always, time goes on, focus goes away, and we become unsiloed. We are constantly having new changes to law. We have new changes in elected officials. We have unexpected and unanticipated needs of the community, such as an example of the pandemic and also the shift from methamphetamine to fentanyl. So we got to get the composition correct, and it needs to be permanent in order to be meaningful and sustain past election cycles, past elected individuals, and past agency policies that may shift from time to time. What the coordination structure would provide is key. It provides visibility so that all participants within the stakeholders of the criminal justice system can see what the other is doing. And most importantly, it provides opportunity for alignment, even with our political divides.
That's Tony Hazel, the presiding judge of Spokane County Superior Court. You've been listening to a special edition of Inland Journal, a look at the Safe and Healthy Task Force recommendations. You can read more about them at the Safe and Healthy Task Force website. You can hear this Inland Journal and past programs at SpokanePublicRadio.org. We thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.